Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 1161 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today, I'll be speaking with Leanne. She's a science teacher, the mother of two. One of her children has type 1 diabetes, and Leanne has bipolar disorder. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. If you're a U.S. resident who has type 1 diabetes or is the caregiver of someone with type 1, please go to t1dexchange.org/juicebox and complete the survey. You'll be helping with type 1 diabetes research. It'll only take you 10 minutes and you'll feel good about yourself when you're done. t1dexchange.org/juicebox. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. That's JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% at CozyEarth.com. When you place your first order for AG1 with my link, you'll get 5 free travel packs and a free year's supply of vitamin D. DrinkAG1.com/JUICEBOX. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. Learn more and get started today at contournext.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Touched by Type 1, touchedbytype1.org, and find them on Facebook and Instagram. Touched by Type 1 is an organization dedicated to helping people living with type 1 diabetes, and they have so many different programs that are doing just that. Check them out at touchedbytype1.org. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing people together to redefine what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Jalen. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 14. He's 29 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story. And then later at the end of this episode, you can hear my entire conversation with Jalen. To hear more stories with Medtronic champions, go to MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or search the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform.
Hi, I am Leanne. I'm a mom of two amazing girls. Only one of them has type 1, and she was the first diagnosed in our family on either side. And we live on a little farm in North Carolina. I am a veteran science teacher that has just walked out of the classroom this school year. Animal lover, all the things.
You're not teaching anymore?
Not in the public school sector, which was a huge decision for my family. And so I run my own kids are homeschooled and have been for a while, but I just started yesterday actually running a science co-op for homeschool kids out of my farm. Wow. And so it's super fun. I'm excited about it, but my heart is in minorities and kids that need me in public education. And so it was a hard decision to walk away, but it was definitely the right decision for the time.
How long had you been teaching for?
12 years.
Okay. How old are you?
I am 40.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
Seriously. You know, the alternative is to be dead. So it's perfect.
That's true. Yeah.
So you're 40, you taught for 12 years. You've got two girls. One of them has type 1. How old's the one with type 1?
And her name is Catherine, and we can talk about her. She is 9.
Catherine is 9. How old was she when she was diagnosed?
5.
4 years ago. Okay. And for you and everybody else, I'm sick. Excuse me. I'm a little sick. Might be sneezing and stuff like that as we go along. Okay. So you said there's no other type 1 on either side of her family. Any other autoimmune?
Yes. So I believe her dad, we are divorced and have been since she was born, has a minor autoimmune situation. I also have ulcerative colitis, which is autoimmune. And that's, my mom has an autoimmune disease dealing with her liver.
Your mom does?
My mom.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else going on?
Yes. So I have been diagnosed bipolar for 20-ish years.
Okay.
And that's really like the two big things for me health-wise.
Do they consider bipolar to be autoimmune adjacent?
So I honestly can't answer that super correctly will say, because bipolar is an ongoing, there's a lot of research that says it's genetically linked, but then there's research that says it's trauma induced from at an early age and things like that. My degree is actually in psychology. Teaching biology was a total segue. And before that, I rode horses professionally. So it's kind of a weird thing. But and there's different types of bipolar, and there's constantly new research coming out. So I do not know if it's autoimmune adjacent or not. That's a great question that I should probably learn about.
Annals of Palliative Medicine, which is amegroups.org. At the end of the last century, genome-wide association studies revealed a significant genetic association between bipolar disorder and autoimmune diseases.
Oh. Wow. There you go. That's huge. I should have known that. Mm.
Don't worry. I'll tell you.
Fun fact.
I got the Google. why are you on today?
Actually, I was on the Facebook group long before I listened to the podcast. I always thought I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. Like, when was I going to do that? Mm-hmm. So I started doing it on my way to and from work. I have listened to like very specific episodes that I think were interesting. I love the information, and now I'm getting off topic, but when Catherine was diagnosed, we did not get so much information like so many families do. And so I love this place that I send a lot of families, because I'm connected to a lot of type 1 families, to this podcast. And I was listening to it. It was a couple of different episodes, and thinking about, I think it was DKA on a plane. It was just like, I could cry thinking about it.
Yeah, sure.
And the mom had a newborn and a child and had to choose and those things, and got me thinking about my own struggle in the best scenario, in the best marriage, in the best home, in the best health of a parent taking care of a child with type 1 who's young. It's hard. And then when you put layers of something like bipolar, which is something that you deal with every day, every moment, in a conscious effort on my part, and a layer on top of that, there is a lot of navigating and balancing and planning to make sure that I am in a place to maintain my child's blood sugar and make sure that I'm keeping her alive and safe. And I was like, there's other people out there who are dealing with mental health and trying to take care of their type 1 kid. And I would love to be able to support them, shine a ray of light on that. They're not alone. And it's just hard. It's a hard thing to do all the way around.
Tell me, so let's give a little context to what it's like to have bipolar, and then we'll like layer it over top of what it's like to have to take care of somebody's health while that's going on. So
sure.
Is it cyclical? Does it run for days, weeks, months? How does that happen?
It definitely for me is cyclical, but it's not a perfect cycle. There can be triggering events. Something as simple as thinking there's more laundry than I thought there was to do could be the last straw and send me into a not good place. Or it could be something as a death or not sleeping for 3 days or something like that. That's a serious thing that can trigger it. But it is cyclical for me, but it's not like I can't look on the calendar and tell you on this day I'm going to feel this way. But it definitely goes from pretty good, pretty fantastic, okay, really bad, okay, pretty fantastic, in that order. It's just not always a guaranteed time.
Kind of rolls through. So what does pretty good feel like?
Pretty good is today. Nothing super hard. Really, it's my baseline. And what I learned a long time ago is that my baseline for most things is not even near anyone else's. It's a normal day. If I get 4 or 5 hours of sleep, that's great. I think I did last night. Everything is where I'm okay with today, if that makes sense. I'm not stressed out about the next hour. My kids are okay right now. Just for me, like a normal day, I can get enough done. For me though, a normal day, and I have realized this over years, I do more, I think, by like 8 or 9 o'clock in the day, in the morning, than most people do in a day. And that is not like, I don't need to, that's not like go me. That's not something to be proud of. I am just a very efficient, busy person. And if I have a free moment, I fill it up.
Okay. So is that like,
really a good thing.
Is that like mania? Is it like the up and down part of it?
I struggle with what is normal me and what is bipolar me, because it's the same. And so if I wasn't bipolar, I don't know what that would look like.
Yeah.
And so a normal day for me doesn't feel manic for me. A manic day to me feels manic, where on a normal daily basis, I get extremely frustrated with everyone around me. And I'm super nice about it, because everyone in this planet moves in extreme slow motion for me. I'm always told to slow down talking, when in my head, I'm consciously slowing down every word all day long for the world. Mm-hmm. And that's normal. And manic, I would say it's like a minimum of 50 different topics in my brain, all going very quickly. And I'm pretty aware of all of them while maintaining everything that's around me. The dog over here, the blood sugar on my phone, I hear something on the TV telling the kid to do this, making sure this is going on. And mania is where I feel almost out of control of all of those things. It's too much. I don't know if that makes sense. But there are parts of mania that feel really quote unquote good, where I'm like, nothing's a problem. Like on another day, I might think that like the world is ending over something. And on a manic day, I might like, I'm saving the world. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Is that part of it? Like having a lot of big thoughts? Like,
sorry.
This episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. And now we're going to hear from Medtronic champion, Jalen.
I was going straight into high school. So it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult?
Unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school. I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling over an hour to the nearest endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Did you try to explain to people or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic champions. You see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that motivates me. Started embracing more, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes.
To hear Jalen's entire conversation, stay till the very end. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox to hear more stories from the Medtronic champion community. ContourNext.com/juicebox. That's the link you'll use to find out more about the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. When you get there, there's a little bit at the top. You can click right on blood glucose monitoring. I'll do it with you. Go to meters, click on any of the meters. I'll click on the next gen, and you're going to get more information. It's easy to use and highly accurate. SmartLite provides a simple understanding of your blood glucose levels. And of course, with second chance sampling technology, you can save money with fewer wasted test strips. As if all that wasn't enough, the Contour Next Gen also has a compatible app for an easy way to share and see your blood glucose results. ContourNext.com/juicebox. And if you scroll down at that link, you're going to see things like a buy now button. You could register your meter after you purchase it. Or what is this? Download a coupon. Oh, receive a free Contour Next Gen blood glucose meter. Do tell. ContourNext.com/juicebox. Head over there now, get the same accurate and reliable meter that we use.
So I got my degree in psychology because at the time I was riding horses professionally, and the deal was my family would support me doing that if I finished my degree, and I found behavior fascinating and I wanted to be able to be the gold star of bipolar. Like not every bipolar person has some horrible story and is hospitalized and does all these things. When you look up symptoms of bipolar, ideas of grandiosity is one of them. Okay. And I do see that, but I also wonder, because it's my brain thinking it, I do think I can do great things. I don't think if I jump off the house, I'm going to fly. Mm-hmm. That's not, I recognize that.
Right.
I've also, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, have you done great things?
Yes, I have. Done great
things. There you go.
Every day, we're all doing great things. I'm a good human.
Yeah.
With that being said, something that I think is great today, and I think that's for any human, but could be extremely, I could think it, I did a terrible job at it when I'm in a bad place. The other thing that getting a degree and spending, I spent an astronomical amount of time and work in managing my bipolar because it was hurting people around me. Mm-hmm. And that's not something I wanted to do. So that really pushed me in college to learn everything I could, just like type 1 I did with my daughter. So in saying that, now where I am in my life, I can recognize a rational thought and I can be in a place that feels horrific and still recognize it's irrational. It doesn't mean it's going to get me out of it, but I can still recognize that it's passing and fleeting, where I think a lot of people struggling with depression, bipolar, mental health have trouble recognizing that it's a temporary state. So that is something that I think has been like a huge win for me in the past 20 years of being able to recognize this is going to pass. Mm-hmm. Like this deep hole is passing.
Has any of this led to drinking or drugs or anything like that?
Sure. No drugs, which I grew up in a house with fantastic parents. They were both divorced and remarried, but my parents on an together, probably not great, but on an individual level, just champions for their kids and very supportive. And my dad grew up in severe poverty growing up and is incredibly self-made, but had some experiences with people in his family with alcohol. So it was like pounded in my head, like drugs and alcohol are bad. And it wasn't until later, like I guess later in life. And I was like the kid that I would like the DD for friends in high school when I'm the one with tattoos and pink hair and I'm wild. So people wouldn't have expected that. I definitely eventually did drink some in high school and college and things like that. But, and yes, to answer your question, yes. When I would feel like there was medicine wasn't working, there's nothing to do. I feel like I was never like, I don't think alcohol was ever a problem. And I will say that, and that's me saying that. That's not somebody else saying it. I had a horse farm and an opportunity to ride horses professionally at 20. And that was life-saving and grounding for me. So even if I was going to drink a huge amount of alcohol and not sleep all night, I would show up for my horse the next morning. And having that responsibility was really powerful.
Mm-hmm. How do you ride a horse professionally?
I know it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's actually a trillion-dollar industry in our country. So it's different than other sports because you're not working with a team. So if you, in short, and it's kind of a crappy way to qualify it, if you're paid money to ride horses or paid money for instruction on riding horses, technically you get your professional status. Now that is a massive spectrum. I mean, somebody tomorrow could say they're going to go and teach riding and be a quote unquote professional, but it limits you at horse shows. Like obviously professionals, amateurs don't show against each other typically. So how do you do that? So people who have lots of money like to buy really pretty horses, but typically, or may, not typically, may not know how to ride them or train them or care for them. So they pay a lot of money to watch their pretty animal perform well. And so we are hunter jumpers. We jump over stuff basically. Mm-hmm. It's super, super technical, more technical than you can imagine. But if you kind of think about it on mainstream, people understand Kentucky Derby. So like these people that own the racehorses don't ride them. They watch them and go, yay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. But there's also a huge industry. I mean, every little girl wants a pony and half of those little girls want to do it forever. And so basically, I guess to answer your question, how do you ride professionally? You get paid to do it in be really good at it. Usually, hopefully in the best of cases, there are definitely people in the industry who may be in any industry that aren't stellar, right. But did that answer your question?
Yeah, no. So yeah. Rich people pay you to ride their horse for them.
Used
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Oh, but that's the vibe, right? Okay. I got
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your daughter's diagnosis?
Yes. So she was 5. Her dad and I separated when I was pregnant with her. It was really, really rough divorce. Things are much better now. So we were in the process of divorcing, you know, when she's born and things like that. And so there's already a bunch of issues with that. And so I was teaching school, teaching science, and my mom would pick her up from preschool at 12 every day. And so at lunch, I would call and just, how was your day? What are you doing? And my mom's like, she says she doesn't feel good. Her stomach hurts. None of like the symptoms you see. Like I had not noticed more drinking. I had not noticed weight loss, none of that. And I said, well, she never complains. Please call a pediatrician, see if they'll just get her in today. Like my gut was like, just go. This wasn't like a looming thing. It was like, she's complaining, she doesn't feel good. I feel like she needs to go to the doctor. So my mom got an appointment. I'm still teaching biology or science that day. And they called me from the pediatrician and they said, they think it's just a virus. I said, no, it's not. And I said, can they just check her for a UTI? So mm-hmm. standard in the UTI P test is glucose. And her blood sugar was 300. And pausing and backtracking, 2 years before that, I was teaching seventh grade and I had an awesome seventh grader with type 1 and a diabetic alert dog in my class every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I got super into understanding the science of it and educated for this kid because I became her person at school.
Yeah.
Having that experience, that was actually the first phone number I ever gave my teacher phone number to a parent was her mom. And so I'm at school and my mom's telling me this information and she's like, they're going to send us to Brenner's Hospital, which is a children's hospital here. And I was like, okay. And I knew then my child was diabetic. And I texted my former student's mom and I said, daughter's at doctor. She's got a blood sugar 300. We're going to Brenner's. And having that support system, they're still incredibly good friends of mine today. That student is in school to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I literally texted her this morning. So, and they were really, it was really great to have that knowledge there. And so we go to Brenner's. for 3 days and it was awful. I mean, it wasn't awful. Brenner's was great, but anytime, you know, holding your kid down that's five and doesn't understand, yeah. you know, for all the things, but we were lucky. We weren't in DKA. We caught this, you know, early right. and the education was exhausting and probably more so because I kept asking questions and I wanted to understand every bit of it. And that's just not possible to do at diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then I was in the midst of this situation with custody with, oh my gosh, now I've got to send my daughter somewhere without me.
Yeah.
And so all of those things went on. So we were at the hospital about 3 days and we went home. And in the weeks following that, thankfully at the time I was working at a phenomenal school. She came to work with me, which is not unheard of in public education, really. I stayed home with her for a little while and then she came back to school with me some, lots of pieces and all the things for her, like recognizing, you know, we do the JDRF walk. And after we did the first one, she was diagnosed in April and the walk was in like October-ish. And after we did the walk, she's like, we did the money, we raised the money. Is there a cure now? And I didn't recognize that I had not fully explained that to her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She thought you were just saving up to pay for a thing that she needed.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And so, and then in the car, and she was just, this like literally breaks my heart thinking about today. She was five and we were on injections. We only started on the pump in December of this year.
Oh, okay. Or
20, like it'll be a year in December. If I that see. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to do it. And so we were on injections forever. So I was like the pro at the, you know, MDIs. So at the time we were doing a lot of her injections in her stomach and she's five and I'm driving down the road and she was like, Mom, when I have a baby, are my shots going to hurt my baby? And I'm like, at 5 years old, she's thinking about when she's a mom and having to put shots in her stomach. And I'm mm-hmm. like, if she's vocalizing that, like what else is she worried about? I mean, it just, so those things, I mean, just all the things that come with diagnosis, but that was kind of our story. And so we regrouped and then we go into kindergarten. So she was 3 months into a diagnosis and kindergarten starts. I fought in court for her not to go to public school because I know what public school diabetic care is in our area. Her school has had a nurse one day a week and we are one of, then she was at one of the better public schools, but her dad at the time wanted her to be in public school. And I lost in court because the school was trained on diabetes.
Right.
And so the first bit of her kindergarten experience was not great. She had a teacher that I know very well, but no teacher, everyone knows this, can be responsible for a newly diagnosed
yeah.
5 and 6 year old in school.
It's a lot.
It was horrible. And so thankfully that was COVID year.
Oh,
and so she came home.
Right.
So I was now teaching virtually and COVID was, you know, really, I hate to say it this way because I feel for all the negative things, but it was really positive for our journey with type 1 because sure. we were now home all together all day. And so, and she never went back to public school after that.
Arden and I had that conversation the other night. She said, really? Like, she's like, you know, I hate what happened to everybody and all the bad stuff that came of it. But she's like, how great was it to be able to stay in the house?
Yes.
And not have to, you know, I don't know. Just she's like, I liked it. And I was like, ah, I got you. So
phase one was my favorite.
I enjoyed not being sick mostly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because yeah. I didn't have COVID and you weren't meeting other people. So like no colds and nothing like that ever happened. And now, you know, I'm sniffing now because some dirty person must have coughed on me in public or something.
And I'm in the Bible Belt. So you can imagine we were the people that I wouldn't leave the house. And we had, thankfully we were in, like, we in a good situation. We actually moved to this farm in the middle of COVID ourselves. I wouldn't even let the movers in the house. And so my kids had their horses. They had everything. Like, we didn't have to, we were happy in our bubble. And I'm so, and I know that a lot of people did not have that situation. And I did a lot for my students yeah. online, a lot to make sure they were okay.
I'd also like to say that there's a lot wrong with not being around other people yes. and socializing and everything. I'm just saying, like, it was a nice break. Like, I think
it was.
I think that's how, if you're not going to be impacted by the health effects of COVID, right, or the financial stuff or all the other bad stuff that came with it, I think 20 years from now, you'll look back and think, like, you remember that time we got off for 2 years? Like, that's kind of, because it's how it felt a little bit. It was a little like, hey, you don't have to do as much for a while.
And yes.
I think people found that attractive for, you know, at people in certain parts of their life. Like, if you were 21 just getting out of college, this is horrible.
Awful.
Yeah, if you're yeah. in college, if you're in high school, it was a but I'm old. I was like, oh, like a break. This is nice, you know, so I don't know.
For me, it was so amazing to not have to be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I had to be on my Zoom classes at certain times. But like if my kids wanted to watch a movie at 10 o'clock at night, we just watched a movie. We painted the garage neon colors because why not? And my mom, who is amazing, like of the epitome of like a grandma and a mom is who my mother is. And she's the best. So she makes slideshows for everything. So every birthday, my kids from the birthday year before is where the slideshow starts. And now she YouTubes instead of CDs. And so she made slideshows, COVID one, COVID phase two for all of us. And it was like pictures we were sending to each other in the family because she has autoimmune disease and we had type one in our house. So we right. were not like, we yeah. were doing things. And, but she documented all those things like in our fun, what we were doing, plus what's happening in the news and plus what the new restrictions are and how cool. I told my kids, I was like, you're going to use this in your history class in 15 years. Like you're going to use your grandma's slideshow to document this time. Yeah, but yes, I agree. Possible. It was a magical time on some levels.
So your daughter's diagnosed, she's not DK, which is terrific. She has these like kind of deep thoughts pretty early about it. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to use a pump, which is fine. Was she on a CGM?
She was, but here's the thing, and I'm grateful now, but it was awful then. I only knew CGMs existed because I had a student in class, and I was like, that thing that shows it on her phone. Mm-hmm. And I asked about that, and they're like, well, we don't let our patients get them for 3 months. I was like, okay. So reflectively, I understand that, but it was hard. I mean, we got up every night at 2 a.m., finger sticked every night, like all the things. And also, too, she's an extremely picky eater. Always has been. She won't eat meat. She won't eat peanut butter. She won't eat bread. She won't eat cheese. Like she eats nothing. Mm. And so getting her, like we weren't pre-bolusing in the beginning. Like we didn't know. I had to give her a shot in between a meal because I didn't know what she was going to eat.
Yeah.
And so we did have a CGM is the short answer, but we had to wait 3 months. And I'm again, reflectively, I'm grateful because we've had times like Dexcom sent us the wrong stuff. And so we went 5 days after having a CGM for how long mm-hmm. and not having it.
You didn't know what
and
to do.
And so being yeah. able to know what to do and just revert back to that quickly is helpful.
Okay, cool. She did go to a pump recently, you said?
She did. There's this incredible organization where we live called the Diabetes Family Connection. Mm-hmm. In November of the year she was diagnosed, we went to family camp for type 1 diabetes, which was the single best decision I did for my family for type 1. You are at this camp and every family is beeping. The carbs are listed for you at dinner. Every counselor, everyone there is type 1 or someone in their family is. And we had just this great experience. Well, then COVID happened. We didn't get to go. And then we got to go back last October. And it was fantastic. And the little girl in our cabin needed to change her Omnipod. And I was asked, I was like, is it okay if we, Catherine and I watch? And she said, yes. And right after she changed it, Catherine goes, I'll get a pump. And I was like, great. And I was like messaging the doctor from camp. I was like, can we get a pump appointment? Like, yeah. Let's do it.
She's in.
Yeah. She's in. And so, I mean, and that's been great. And it's so much easier, like so much easier. There are its own, you know, issues with that, but she is on Omnipod 5 now.
Okay, cool. Why did you wanted to come on the podcast to talk about the challenges you have? So I think we understand to some degree how the bipolar impacts you, but like you're saying, you're having a good day today. What happens when you're having like a bad day?
Every single thing is extremely hard. And when I'm in a state like now, when I'm rational and I'm happy and having a good day, it seems almost like pathetic and irrational to even like talk about that state of mind because when I'm in it is incredibly real. Mm-hmm. But when I talk about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like you have this amazing, blessed life, like get your stuff together. So for me, I think your question was, what does it look like? Or how is that what your question was?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you even know what it looks like because is the you I'm talking to now able to witness a bad day and under, do you know what I mean?
Yes, not a long time ago because I've put the work in. And that's the thing too, I have to keep reiterating. It is an everyday, every minute conscious effort to manage bipolar. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think people don't get the support that they need or the education to understand what's really happening. I can now. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have given you a list of what I think it feels like. But for me, it's hard to get out of bed. It's hard to take the next breath. It's super hard to go get food. It's for my kids to do normal daily things. But I think having like, I would never, and I say this because I'm a super loving mom and it sounds like normal. I would never want like my bipolar to affect my children. I know it does because they can tell when mom's like however mom is. But I am very good, I think, in my perspective, from sheltering them as best I can when I'm having a really bad day or if like I'm crying, I mean, I'll just say I'm having a hard time. But I'm good at reaching out to my support system and being like, I need you to run interference or can you just come help me for a few minutes? And that's not always an option.
So a day like that is you not being able to like cope? Is it?
Depends.
And you maybe couldn't even feed somebody or yourself. Like it could get to that point, hard to get out of bed.
I would say I yes and no. So I will push through and force myself to get up and make sure my kids are okay.
Okay.
But it is like a level of hard that I can't convey in a normal rational state. It feels like climbing Mount Everest to get up from my bed and walk to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Everything is like a fight to get it done. So it really depends. And that can last a very short time, meaning a day, or that can last a couple of days, if that makes sense. But it's not always an option to have someone come help me. And now that my kids are a little older, and they're home most of the time, I can delegate and be like, tell my older daughter, I really need to go get a snack right now for my younger daughter. Or I can, now we have Uber Eats. I can DoorDash food to my front door and tell my kids to go get the food, mm-hmm. which sounds horrible because as a parent, I'm a super hands-on involved mom. And so like even talking about it now, it's like, wow, that's so pathetic. But I recognize like,
in that moment, that's what needs to happen.
It's horrible. Yeah. Like it is horrible.
If Catherine's 9 now, how old's your other one?
13.
So
and her name is Hayden, and we can say her name as well. She's okay. Awesome.
So when my question was, is when Hayden and Catherine are like, I don't know, 4 and 1, and you have a bad day, then what do? Do you tape them to the refrigerator so they can't hurt themselves? Like, what do you, like, you know what I mean?
No. Yeah. And that's a great question. So what did I do? Those, there's like a period of years in that time that are just a blur of survival for me. I know that I was doing everything to make good memories, but it was more of like shutting us all in a room, mm-hmm. watching a movie, putting a TV on. My entire family lives within 10 minutes of my house. However, as understanding as they think they are about bipolar,
yeah,
still does not change that they think I'm being hard or demanding or unreasonable or rude or mean or whatever, when I truly am a lot of the time being the best that I can be in that moment. My best just looks different on different days. And that's true for everyone.
On one of those days, while it's happening, do you consciously think this is a bad day? Or
oh, yeah.
You know. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like your consciousness is different on the same day. Like you have a baseline understanding of what good and bad looks like. I don't know if we're using the right words, but what these two different days look like. And then you know you're in, it's not like you're, I don't know, it's not like you're trapped under a building and you think this is normal, this is fine. You think I'm trapped under a building.
But there was a time I did feel that way.
Okay.
It's really because of, and I keep saying it, like I had to have the understanding of this. I had to recognize, like, it's truly like, I think this would help. This would help kind of make sense. When Catherine's diagnosed and all the things, you know, when she gets low or really high, she can be hard, right? So when they were younger, she was being super mean to her sister. She like hit her or something. And I think she was really low. And I said, you know, that's a hard parenting line. And I remind her older sister that was not okay. And I said, honey, when her blood sugar's low, she really can't help that. And she said, God still gives her a choice. And I was like, I hear you. But so it's kind of the same thing for me. The choices look different. It's choosing, like it's, I'm still trying and choosing to do right and do those things. It's just that best or that choice is a lot crappier choice than another day, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And from the other person's perspective, they can understand the scenario that you're in, but it doesn't change the fact that they got punched.
Right.
Right. So
why I started trying to be better and being in my diagnosis, because I was hurting people around me with my words, with my actions, completely unintentionally.
It's why you hear people and family say things like, you know, I had to separate myself from that. Like, I love them, but I can't be around that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have that to worry about too, that you could be the catalyst for your kids one day, just being like, hey, mom, I love mom, but I can't do this all the time. Do you take any medication for this? Anything that helps?
I do. It's actually really interesting. So when I was first diagnosed, I went through, and typically in about, at the time, sometimes can take 2 years. I mean, there's bipolar is such a, not odd, but complicated diagnosis, mm-hmm. that there's not like 2 pills you get to fix it. Different pills that work for different people, different combinations. And so I went through all the psychotropic drugs and have been managed homeopathically for the most part for about 8 years, which when Catherine was diagnosed, I no longer would take anything to sleep. That was a concern. I need to be able to hear alarms. I've got to be able to wake up. That was a piece of it, but I was on homeopathic before that, which, it's just an amazing situation. And we happen to have a connection to someone she's a neurologist, a doctor, and a like registered homeopathic, whatever. And a lot of her research has shown, that bipolar, I'm probably going to get half of this. I'm nutshelling it a lot, I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's basically you need to feed your brain the right stuff to produce the chemicals you need. And so it's like a really, it's a lot. It's like 5 pills 3 times a day of like all these different magnesium, stuff like that. And then I do take another medication just in the morning, like a Vyvanse, like a, it's like an ADD drug actually, which typically you don't give to bipolar people because it makes them manic. That's not what it does for me. It actually helps me slow down kind of.
So you are speaking quickly, but there's a scenario where you're talking much faster than this even. Yeah. Like right now, like you were speaking at a pace that I would have to rev myself up for.
Okay.
And I speak pretty quickly. So, you know, like to get, like, I'm trying to think, like you'd have to make me upset or passionate and then I could speak at your pace, but I don't think I could keep it going for more than a couple of minutes. And you are, this is normal. I'm watching you.
This is super calm. Super calm.
Yeah. You are absolutely normal right now. Like you, but if I, but I also feel like I could take these headphones off and say, hey, Leanne, tell me about yourself. And come back an hour from now and you'd still be talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you'd be missed though.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. it's just interesting, really. So is this a lifelong thing for you?
Yes. And I actually, it was the day I was diagnosed with bipolar was a great day for me because it's like, wow, there's a name for this. There's a label for this. There's a reason for this. Like, I'm not just this mean person. Like, I'm not just so... But like looking back at like my childhood, God bless my mother as a saint. So yes, definitely. Typically, bipolar, doesn't show up is the wrong word because I think it's showing up early ages, but they don't really see it till adolescence and early 20s and things like that. But again, the research is changing from where we're understanding what bipolar is. And also there's people that are ADHD or that they're bipolar and they're misdiagnosed for ADHD because they're only looking at the manic part of it.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of that too. And then whole tangent side note, we've now know that 90% of our serotonin is made in our gut. And I have ulcerative colitis. Don't you think there's a correlation? So yes, sir.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you. I've never agreed with something so much that I didn't understand as
that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As the idea that somehow balancing your gut biome is valuable for you. I don't understand. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know I could probably pick my way through the understanding of it. I'm just saying that it's not one of those things that you just open up a book and the book tells you for sure, like, this is exactly what's happening, right. You know, but I just think it's true. Like there's, I just did a thing recently. Hold on. What did I just do? Like I take a probiotic every day. And
good for you.
Yeah. And I recently did like a reset kind of a thing. I'm looking for it right now. It was like a 30-day. I stopped taking my normal probiotic for 30 days, and I took this other one for 30 days. I'm trying to find it for you so I can tell you what it is.
Do you refrigerate your probiotic? Does it require refrigeration?
I know that there's people who say that the ones that need to be refrigerated are better somehow. I don't buy one that does. My hippie lady says I don't have to. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a tree hugging. I love it.
So. I tried something called Body Bio Gut Plus. It was like a 30-day thing to kind of like improve your gut function. And it wasn't incredibly expensive. Actually, it's unavailable right now on Amazon, so I must not have been the only one
doing it. Probably because of your... Did you do a plug for it?
Maybe? I don't think I said anything about it. No, because I wasn't sure how it would go. I actually bought one for me, one for Arden, and one for my son. My wife, because my wife's like, I have my own probiotics. I'm like, fine, whatever. So I think this is supposed to be a daily thing. This is like somebody's probably using this as their daily probiotic, but my person said just switch to this one for 1 month to see, you know, what happens. And it was interesting. Like you could tell, like I would tell you that my digestion. Like that whole process from when it goes in my mouth to how it feels in my stomach to how it comes out the other side is so much different in the last 2 years, 2.5, 3 years than it was my whole life. Like as an adult, wow. I got through most of my life by taking fiber and yeah. Thinking that was my concern. I probably could take a little fiber still, but I don't, and I don't have a problem. I don't eat enough vegetables, so I think maybe a tiny bit would help me, but I think it's the... as crazy as this sounds, I think it's partly the probiotics and the supplements that I take. I also think that it got better when I went on the Wegovy. And
Yes.
It slows my digestion down. And I think that really helped as well. So, you know,
I have a friend who has ulcerative colitis, which is weird because it's kind of rare. And she's like one of my best friends. And I got diagnosed way later after her, but it was just crazy that like we have the same thing. But she has recently gone on it's not Wegovy, but it's the same class of injection. Mm-hmm. And it has helped her significantly.
Yeah.
Which is not an ulcerative, Wegovy is not an ulcerative colitis drug.
No.
But it's helped her because it has slowed down her digestion.
Yeah. I don't understand all that. Obviously I don't understand the first thing about it. All I can tell you is that whole process that I described from my mouth to my butt, it just goes better now than it used to.
Yeah.
I used to really like there were days where I was like, I would struggle with it. And like, yeah, I'd be one of those people who like have to run to the bathroom and then I wouldn't. And then, you know, it was great. And now it's all really fairly consistent. So I don't know. Just all I can tell you is it was a big impact for me. Jeez. It's tough because you're talking so fast. I don't have my thoughts.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. Like, no, it's just interesting because that's not a thing that normally happens. I'm usually ahead of people when I'm talking to
people
them.
People think I'm from the north when I go everywhere.
Oh, I would imagine.
I'm southern as they come. I can drive a tractor.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine if someone talked to you, they definitely think you're from the northeast. But yeah, it's interesting because I'm used to being pacing-wise a little ahead of the people I'm talking to because my brain works like northeasty. But yeah, you got me a little bit. Like I'm a little off balance because I'm behind. I'm not used to being in that position.
Think about it. Do you ever get frustrated when you talk to people that are really slow to get to the point and barely and like talk slow?
I gotta tell you, Leanne, it bothers the shit out of me.
That's my normal experience with every interaction times like 10 or 20.
I would imagine.
Like when I'm and it's very frustrating. And so I usually like, especially as a teacher, which I loved the last 5 years of teaching. It was an incredible experience. I had students that have bettered my life.
Hold on one second. Can you give me 1 second?
Yeah, you're good.
This is Arden. Hey, Ards, I'm recording, but what's going on? Sorry, never mind. Is this something important? Can I call you in like...
Invite Arden. I love you, Arden.
Oh, this lady is yelling. She says she loves you.
I just back from business.
Okay, well, I'll be done in like 20 minutes. I'll give you a call, okay? All right, bye. She just saw the look on her face. She was like, I just got back from my business class. I wanted to tell you about it. And I was like, okay.
I love that she wants to share.
But I said, oh, I'm recording. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, it's okay. This is her second day of her sophomore year of college. So,
yeah. That's exciting.
She was really, I have to say, because there's no other place to put this, and maybe it'll give me a chance to reset myself. So Arden, for the first time, traveled to school completely by herself. Right? And so she got in a car in New Jersey and drove to Georgia. So she drove 700 miles and we split it up for her. She drove like, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours. She stopped at a family friend's house and then she moved on and she did the rest of the drive. But the poor kid got sick like 2 days before. Like I'm sick now. I think she made me sick, but that's not the point. Like she's like fever, like runny nose, driving this 700 miles by herself in a car packed full of, I want to say stuff, but let me be honest, it's 85% clothing and packed full of stuff. She had to make some stops, you know, all this. And then when she arrived in Georgia, her room wasn't ready. So she had to stay with another friend for a night and then get up in the morning, move herself into her room by herself. Like that night she was on the phone with me, like building furniture, like not a thing Arden does. She did so well with it all, but she's sick the whole time. And now on Sunday night, she's like, I didn't get any of my work. The one thing I don't understand about school, no matter what it is they send you a syllabus. It's 6 days before school starts. They know everybody's coming in from out of state. Like, and then they say on day one, you have to have this stuff completed. So now she's freaking out a little bit on Sunday night. And I'm looking at her on FaceTime, like, Arden, you got to like calm down a little bit. You know, like she's like, this isn't done. I haven't done this yet. And I'm like, you're doing terrific. I'm like, first of all, you got yourself there. You're alive.
You did so much good stuff.
Yeah. You moved in. You went to the storage unit. You went and got your other stuff. You like, you know, you're putting furniture together. Like just
A+.
Yeah. Go to bed. Like she's like, well, I still have to. I'm like, Arden, I'm looking at you. Just go to bed. Like, you know what I mean? Like lay down, go to sleep, wake up tomorrow, try again. You know? So I said to her, I don't think she listened to me, but I'm going to keep telling her. I said, the most valuable thing I've figured out wrapped around, you know, responsibility as an adult is to have a flexible to-do list. just, you know, if you have 10 things on your list, obviously the thing at the top is the most important. That's how you think about it. But don't think of it as the most important. Just think of it as the next thing. So if you have to move number three to number one, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, you just keep ordering things like that and you'll be okay. So hopefully she'll do that and not beat herself up on, I'm still on number one, but I got to get to number four. You know what I mean?
Well, North Carolina is probably closer to her than you are. So she can always come here if she needs, I mean, it's kind of still far, but yes. I have a friend's farm in Georgia. So
there are so many lovely people who have reached out and said, like, oh, if there's a storm, she can come here. And I tell her all the time and she goes, okay, I'm going to have one of your people murder me. Is that what's going to happen? And I'm like,
that's what I would say too.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
on a side note, we should definitely do a podcast on education and type one, because I have a lot to say about that.
I bet Leanne, if I said to you, so Pop Rocks, you'd have a lot to say about that too.
That's so true. But education is something, I don't know a lot about Pop Rocks, but education is something as a type one diabetes care person in a school system, working with it in the classroom and being a parent to it and being a parent, having to have another teacher take care of my kid, just so many, and understanding the legality of 504s and IEPs and all that's the whole thing, but yeah. I won't tangent. But before Arden called, I was saying that, how it gets annoying for me, to go all day through life when everyone's in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly, I feel like I'm being insanely patient. And as a teacher, I worked with highly motivated, it's the most diverse school in our county. And we have a county of 52,000 students. And we were one of the top schools in the country because it's a early college program where kids have to get in and apply, but it's free. And they graduate the 2-year degree, or associates and a high school diploma. And so we're high minority, high diversity. My kids' stories are unbelievable. But with that being said, I'm very conscious in that situation because I'm teaching information. I'm fielding questions. I'm being really patient. And a lot of my kids' English isn't their first language. So I'm as slow and patient and as I can be. And so when I get home, trying to maintain living in slow motion around me, but not in my head, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. is really, really hard. And my husband and my mom's here a lot because she's close by and she used to be a lot of my childcare. Now that I'm home, that's changed. That's who gets lashed out at because they get so frustrated. They're like, just be calm. You should just be paid. Like, be polite. Let me talk. And I'm like, it's been 17 minutes. You said nothing.
I can explain it from my perspective. If you're taking a lot of time in between your words, it's not a voice in my head, but it's this feeling of like, oh my God, come on. Like, I know what you're going to say. How is it possible you don't know what you're going to? Yeah. Like, so I'm following there's like a pentameter to their speech and I'm following it along and I know the next word, but they can't find it. And I'm like, this is fascinating. Like, you know, so it starts out as when I first started making the podcast, I was bad at it. I think I am much better at it now. It doesn't bother me the same way. Like, I just take a different, like, I'm leaning forward talking to you. So like, because I'm trying to listen to you. But you're going so fast that I can't form my thoughts to ask you more questions. And when people are speaking more slowly and you're looking at me today, what I'll do is I'll move the microphone here and I will sit back and relax. Like, I will take this as they're running the show, but I at least can keep up. So even though you're speaking slowly, I do know my next question. I just have to talk myself out of caring how long it's taking you to get your words out. And that I'm actually good at. And there's only been a couple of people. There was one gentleman on here one time. It's been so long now. He was on talking about like trying to DIY insulin. And he spoke so slowly in between his words that when I edited it, pushed his words together and still got emails from people saying, wow, this guy talks really slow. But he was also trying to explain.
He processes while he's.
Yeah. And so I've noticed that really the kind of intellectual people are not very willing sometimes to blurt things out. They choose their words very carefully. And so there's a difference between speaking slowly and speaking
thoughtfully, maybe.
Yeah. It's not thoughtfully. I don't think I don't speak thoughtfully. I think that my words just come to me very quickly. Like, it's, you know.
Well, and I would say too, because I do think I'm an intellect, like I do not, that was not, I totally get what you're saying, I think, but I am a really intellectual thinker. It's just really fast. And for me too, people think like I just don't have a filter. I'm actually using a huge filter. I would just like in a lot of things, but I'm also like very honest and direct, but I try to do it in a kind delivery for those that can't take it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of pieces to my communication.
Yeah.
And I communicate differently depending on my audience or who I'm teaching or what's happening. But the slow speech is a conscious effort all the time.
Right.
And I hate when it comes across as like I've had people be like, do you have somewhere to be? Like, I'm like, no, I'm like, we're just talking. Like, I'm not like, this is not rushing. And so that is a hard piece. It may seem like a petty thing, but that is hard for me on a daily basis and daily interactions.
No,
And I'm always told to calm down, take a breath. And I'm like, totally calm right now, guys. Like, yeah. We could meditate if you want.
I just speak very quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and I open every, when I used to be a teacher, I open every class with, I talk fast. If you don't know what I said, let's start again. It's me. It's right. Not you.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, there's this one part of it that's a superpower. If you ever get into an argument, you can make sense while you're yelling. That's such a big deal in an argument because most people.
I'm good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because most people can't do that. And so when you're like lit up and you're speaking quickly and you're still making sense, it throws people off a little bit. And mm-hmm. especially if it's a harsh interaction, like if you're yelling back and forth at each other and your brain's still working quickly, the other person is at a significant disadvantage, which is,
no, that's true.
Yeah. Not a thing that's and really occurred in my life much since I'm older, well, but you know,
and there, I got to remember. So I don't forget. Cause there's two things. With that being said, I have a thing about certain diagnoses as being superpowers. And then also something just that made me think of someone was like, oh, I should tell him that. But when I'm manic, the speech patterns are so fast that sometimes my words are slurred together. Mm-hmm. And I have trouble writing because I will not finish writing the word before I start the next word. And so letters get left out. I used to do it at school on the board and kids were like, oh, you left out a letter. I'm like, you're right, I did. Mm-hmm. Because my brain is working faster than I can get it on the paper.
Yeah.
So that is hard sometimes. But about diagnosis. So I have, of course, in the school system, I've worked with kids who have autism and things like that. And I use autism because I think it's going to correlate to my point. If you look at a list of symptoms for autism, obviously it's a huge spectrum, but a lot of the things on that list, they're not symptoms, they're like gifts. If you've got heightened awareness and sensitivity, you extreme intelligence, like savant stuff. And I think the same for bipolar. There are definitely, and then maybe that's when people are like, oh, she's delusional. Delusional's on that symptom list. But there, I can multitask on a level people couldn't even stay with one of the tasks. And I don't mean that. I love people. People are great, but that is something I can do. And I also can work in controlled chaos very, very well. I can go very long periods without sleep and still be solid. Not that that's something you should do, but like mm-hmm. on an average night, I sleep about 4 hours a night. I get a lot done in a day. And so I do think that there are like pieces to it. And because I've taught science for so long, I do think there are evolutionary links to things. You know, there's like the whole thing with your blood type goes to who your ancestors were. If you were hunter-gatherers, if you were farmers, there's like a correlation to the blood type you have and like what you're supposed to eat and stuff. And I've been a vegetarian for 35 years and I'm supposed to eat red meat. What? But that's okay. So with that being said, I feel like, and maybe I'm totally off-handed here, I think like with autism and certain things, there may be some type of evolutionary genetic link in there for pieces of it. Does that sound crazy?
I have only heard about the blood type thing one time and I don't remember. We looked into it. I don't remember if it was like if I could find validity or not behind it. I can't think back that far.
There probably is. It's called Eat Right for Your Type. And there probably is some validity. But also, if you look at like blood type O, blood is the most popular in our country. And it's right. the most recessive blood type. So it's really on who settled here and kept passing it down. So like probability wise, that makes sense.
Here's something I'll share with you because it seems like you would want to know. That last bit that you talked about is the first time that I did not follow what your point was.
Okay.
Thank
you for asking.
Yeah, yeah. So going back through the rest of the conversation, by the way, not just you, I hope it's obvious when you're listening. Like, I don't care if I even agree with people who I'm talking to. I'm just, they're explaining how they feel. And I try to ask questions. Right. But for the last 50 minutes, every one of your points that you've made, I've understood what it is you're saying. And then you started off with, I'm going to like use people with autism as an example, and then you went to blood types, and I have to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're trying to tell me.
No, I appreciate that so much because I hate it when people agree with me and they don't know what I said. I can't stand that.
Right.
Like, just ask.
I ask you just to rephrase it and try to make your point again?
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically what I'm saying, I think with a lot of, and again, my degrees in psych, so I've looked at a lot of different mental health diagnoses, things like that. I'm very interested in behavior. And what makes us do what we do. And in looking at a lot of diagnoses that we have that get a negative label, like autism, like bipolar, there are actually some really strong attributes in those disorders that people who don't have them cannot do. And because, and this is probably where I lost you, because I just sort of in my head pretended you had normal, like a, not normal, that is not what I meant, like a chunk of knowledge to connect this. And it's my fault. No one would, unless you're in my science class. So sorry.
Right.
So going back, I went off topic again. There is a lot of like genetic and evolutionary links to things we do and how we live and health and all the things. And that's where I went to blood type. Stay with me. It's going to make sense. Where there's like genetic links to, if you have this blood type, then your ancestors were probably farmers because this is what genetically works best for you. So when I say that, I think that there is probably some genetic advantage at somewhere in my ancestral history to being able to stay awake for 20 hours,
okay,
to being able to multitask. Like the there was a Predator movie I went and saw, I don't know, a long time ago. And the Predator dude, alien, they wanted the most superior DNA from the planet. And that was in the child with autism. And I was like, this is my point I've been trying to make. They were thinking that the most superior DNA was in this savant child with autism.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it kind of like conveys my point that you can have these diagnoses. And yes, they are very hard and there's a lot of stuff to deal with. But I do believe there may be some piece of that that served my people 10,000 years ago or whatever.
If I can, like, you just spoke for a couple of minutes. The first thing that was really interesting that you did was, I said, hey, can you just reframe this? And you spent the first 40 words not talking about it. Like it was, you were like, I have a science background. And because of that, like you, like, and I think what you were saying was, I've paid attention to how past civilizations and how they lived might impact how we are now today. And you use the blood type thing to make the point. But if I could boil it down, what you just told me, I'm going to try to boil it down as closely as I can. You were telling me that you think that you work well on a little amount of sleep because perhaps the people whose bloodline you come from were good at that too. Is that fair?
It's fair. I would just say like there's a genetic advantage. Like it, bipolar allows me to do certain things that I couldn't do if I wasn't bipolar.
Okay.
But it also comes with negative things. So wherever that genetic link of being bipolar comes in, maybe that served an advantage because things get passed down, survival of the fittest, things that get passed down survive for certain reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe being able to do certain things that I can do as bipolar served some primitive culture well. But that could be a total leap.
It's crazy as it's going to sound. I don't really care about all that. What I cared about was it's interesting that like there are connections that you see between things that I'm not aware of, right? And the way you describe them, like the way you talk, I guess, it was hard for me to see the connections that you were, like, yeah. I know now, but through the first time, like, I didn't understand what you were getting at. And that's got to be frustrating for you because you know what the hell you're talking about and you're trying to say it out loud. And I mean, listen, it's communication one way or the other. It's just, there are plenty of people who don't have bipolar who also don't communicate either. But you were getting out all the words, but I wasn't seeing the lines you were drawing. And now I do because we went back through it. But even that would be exhausting to do over and over again. And so
it's exhausting. Sorry.
No. I was going to say, do your kids follow you?
Yes, they do most of the time. But that point is so powerful because to me it feels validating because I struggle with that every day. Like, I have the most amazing man in my life, amazing guy, but he's logical, he's rational, his degree's in accounting, he's a very linear thinker. We're having a conversation and I say something that he feels is unbelievably unrelated and it makes complete sense, the connection to me. And that doesn't go well sometimes. And my mom has a habit of just saying okay to things because she gets lost in my words and knows I get frustrated when I have to keep repeating myself. And yes, she's older, but she's not like, I mean, she's
yeah,
like good.
right.
And so that is absolutely a struggle all the time.
Yeah.
And
I can imagine.
And so, yeah, there's something else. My kids. When I know I need to like take it back is when my older daughter is like, she gets really stressed and will be like, I can't do that. You just asked me to do 10 things and I can't do that one. Let me finish the other things first. And I'm like, okay, that's reasonable. Mm. I personally can handle a list of 50 things in my brain. That is not reasonable for you. I don't say that out loud.
Yeah.
But and then the other thing that I'm seeing in my child with type one is she is the spitting image of me, except that I'm her mom and she has type one and she's had the opportunity to be homeschooled and to have a lot of things that would have been great for me. I had great parents in childhood, but raising me was probably hard. Are we allowed to cuss on here? Hard as the opposite of heaven. So with that said, I see like my type one child does not sleep like at all. We did all the things like, and so I just stopped with the bedtime. She goes to bed when she's tired, no matter what. She's up at 6:30 or 7 for the day. If I let her go to bed before 10 o'clock, she's up at 2 a.m. for the day. Mm. And I just can't do that. And that's something too, I think that ties into being bipolar. There's very little time that I'm alone or an adult or away from children. And I do feel like I'm with my kids more than most parents. And that's what I want. And I love that. I'm highly involved in their lives, probably too involved sometimes, but not getting like, everybody's like, well, just do it when they go to bed. Cause my students are pushing for me to do a podcast, another conversation, but I'm like, when would I do that? And there's just very little time that I'm alone because my kids are awake, mostly my younger child. My older one was like that, but now that she's a teenager, she sleeps. Mm-hmm. So she just, so I do wonder all the time, like, have I passed this on to her? I don't know. Right. And, but I also handle her with so much compassion that it annoys my older daughter more than I think a normal sibling, because not only there's type one there, but there's also, I get her. And I remember not being gotten as a kid and not understanding, oh, she's just a wild, free spirit. Like, yeah. That word can be a great word, but it's thrown around.
Right. Wow. There's a couple things I had a thought in my head and you almost beat it out of me, but I held on to it. So I love that you're drinking Mountain Dew, by the way, because of all the caffeine, it makes me laugh. So there are a number of things that you do well that I wouldn't have expected when we started. So like when I jump in and start talking, you remember where we were before that. That's not a thing I would expect from a person with bipolar. And you are not chomping at the bit to talk when I'm talking. You are listening to me. I've had conversations with people with bipolar before, and it feels like it's them talking and then them begrudgingly waiting while you're talking and then them talking again. Like, and so you and I are having a conversation. It's cool. Like, would that be on a bad day? Could you do that too?
I could. I would be more like, I wouldn't, depending on our relationship at the time, like I would still be polite and I may not be as listening. If people take too long to talk, I process other things in my head because I get bored. I've already thought about everything in the background of your room.
Yeah.
But you're not talking slow. I recognize that because I have the ability now to recognize what appears normal for other people, if that makes sense. And you do not talk like slow. So what about on a bad day, on a low day, like sad, everything's hard. It would have been very hard for me to show up. I would just have come across as like, well, maybe normal to you. But to me, I would have looked like a sad, depressed person. And I kind of just got off track again after you said I was good at keeping up. Something about, oh gosh, what was the original question? Look, I've already messed it up.
No, it's fine. I was saying that you, when I'm speaking, you're not.
I do listen.
You are listening to me. Yeah, yeah.
But I do struggle with that because people think I'm not sometimes because I can do other stuff while I'm listening. And this is, oh my God, my little Catherine did this the other day. She was listening to her social studies video while she was doing her math. And I was like, you can't do both at the same time. Like, you need to focus. She's like, Mom. She's like, I'm smart like that. And I was like, what do you mean? And she could repeat everything on the video and do her math correctly. I'm all like, oh my gosh, she's me. She's really me. Hmm. And you can imagine how public school was for a child who they just thought I was ADD, like, and like hyper or like absent. And my dad was superintendent of school system. So I'm supposed to be like, you know, the good kid.
Yeah. Does it worry you when you see her act in ways that you do? Do you get concerned about that?
I think it's a loaded question. Concerns come with being a parent. Concerns come with type one. Concerns come with bipolar. So yes, but I think I take comfort in knowing that if she is going to face having bipolar, she has a mom who's highly educated on it and well-equipped to have the places, things in place to support her. But I also look at it and I have like done amazing things. I have incredible friendships. I have a great support system. These are things I've had to work at, obviously. So of all the things, this is also, and now I'm probably gonna do one of those things where you might miss the connection, but you're with me. It reminds me of her diagnosis because when she was diagnosed, the endocrinology floor was full. So we were put on the pediatric cancer unit. And I'm sitting there mourning and grieving the life that was and how I'm gonna keep my kid alive. And there's kids there walking around dying of cancer with no hope. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know what? We've got type one. I've been prepared for this by my student 2 years ago. I know more about it than I ever would have because of that student. And we can treat this. We can't treat, because some kids are walking around that can't be treated.
Yeah.
I have a situation where I can buy insulin. I have a place where I can get her mental health needs. She's going to be surrounded by animals and outdoors. She's outside probably 10 hours a day, almost every day. She runs barefoot and builds forts and rides her pony and lays on the ground with her dog and gets dirty. And all of those things are very supportive of healthy mental health, whether you're bipolar or not.
Right.
And so does it concern me? Sure. Cause it's hard. It's really hard, but she has going to have to face hard stuff, and everybody has hard stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. Cool. Is there anything we didn't talk about that we should have?
Do you really want to answer that question? I mean, like,
well,
I could go on 17 tangents.
I mean, I'm up against time, so I'm just want to make sure I didn't get out of here anything that like really like you wanted to get to that we didn't get to.
Yeah. I just would say, like, people that have other people with strong mental health challenges, whether that be depression or bipolar, like, you've got to recognize sometimes that their best may not look that great, but sometimes when I look like I'm being a raging, mean, horrible person, that is the best I can do in that moment. And it is requiring so much self-control. Like, I need grace. I need support. And if you're, especially if there are people that are close to you, it's just like the kid that comes home from school and is the perfect student and then falls apart at home. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a safe place to explode. So that, and also like managing your mental health, and it sounds so cliche, if I don't take care of me, I cannot take care of blood sugar.
Right.
And that felt very selfish for a long time. And it still does sometimes, but being aware of, like, you know what, if I don't take medicine, if I don't do what I need to do, if I do things that I know trigger me, I cannot be available. And it is not just being a bad mom or a not great mom. It is my kid's blood sugar. Yeah. And that's keeping her alive. So yeah. I think that that's important.
That's amazing. Okay. Well, thank you. I really appreciate you doing this. When did you start listening to the podcast?
It's a really great question. I honestly don't know, but it had to be a long time ago because we scheduled this almost a year ago. So maybe like 2-ish or 3-ish. You know what? Maybe even before that, because I was on, like I said, I was on the Facebook group very early on. At diagnosis, I joined all the things. Mm-hmm. But the podcast, let's go with like 2.5 to 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Have I ever done other interviews with people with bipolar that you've heard?
Not that I've heard.
Okay. All right. I think there's some in the After Darks, but.
And you're going to get mad. Well, not mad. You're great. You know, sometimes I can't do them unless I'm in a really good space because the ads, or which I saw the subscription thing coming, mm-hmm. because I need the information, or the information I want isn't coming to me fast enough.
So an ad throws you off?
Yeah. It doesn't throw me off. It's just so long. Not on yours in general. Everybody's.
Yeah.
Someone taking a breath is, I interrupt them because I think they're done talking.
It's interesting. Well, that's amazing. Yeah, I can't make the podcast without ads. We'll all be in trouble.
100%. Don't think I'm not being supportive. Yeah. But like for me, listening to a podcast, just even opening the first time I did, was a step. Like there's a lot of books I want to read and I don't read them because I have to be so focused to read the words and it feels slow and boring because it's hard. But I want the information. Mm-hmm. So I love the podcast and I think it's incredibly great resource for a lot of people. I actually, when I went to pump trading, this family was needed some help. And I sent them to it. And I sent my students that graduate with type one and stuff like that. Like I try to get them as much supports in college as I can. Cause there should be a, you have to take type one class before you leave home.
Yeah. Well, I got you. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate knowing that too.
Thank you.
Having an easy to use and accurate blood glucose meter is just one click away. ContourNext.com/juicebox. That's right. Today's episode is sponsored by the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. Jalen is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and look out online for the hashtag Medtronic Champion. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy my full conversation with Jalen coming up in just a moment. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com. Thanks for hanging out until the end. Now you're going to hear my entire conversation with Jalen. Don't forget MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or the hashtag MedtronicChampion on your favorite social media platform.
My name is Jalen Mayfield. I am 29 years old. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I am originally from Waynesboro, Mississippi. So I've kind of traveled all over. I've just landed here in the Midwest and haven't left since.
Nice. How old were you when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes?
I was 14 years old when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
15 years ago. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. 14 years old. What are you like? Do you remember what grade you were in?
I actually do, because we have like an eighth grade promotion. So I had just had eighth grade promotion. So I was going straight into high school. So it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult going into high school with this new thing?
It was unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school with, you know, our community. We brought three different schools together. So I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was.
Did you even know, or were you just learning at the same time?
I honestly was learning at the same time. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling almost over an hour to the nearest, you know, pediatrician, like endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Was there any expectation of diabetes? Does somebody else in your family have type 1?
No, I was the first one to have type 1 in my family.
And do you have children now?
I do not.
No. Do you think you will one day?
Still thinking about it, but right now I've just been traveling, focusing on my career and myself. So
what do you do? What's your career?
Yeah, so I am a marketing leasing specialist for a student housing company. So we oversee about 90 properties throughout the U.S. So I've been working for them for about 8 years now.
And you get to travel a lot in that job?
Yes, I experience a lot of travel. It's fun, but also difficult, especially with all your type 1 diabetes supplies and all your electronics. So it's a bit of a hassle sometimes. Mm-hmm.
What do you find that you absolutely need with you while you're traveling, diabetes-wise?
I have learned my biggest thing I need is some type of glucose. I have experienced lows, whether that's on a flight, traveling, walking through the airport. And I used to always experience just being nervous to ask for some type of snack or anything. So I felt like I needed to always have something on me, and that has made it my travel a lot easier.
Okay. So growing up in this small town, what was your initial challenge during diagnosis, and what other challenges did you find along the way?
Yeah, I think the initial one, I felt isolated. I had no one to talk to that it was experiencing what I was going through. You know, people would say, oh, I know this is like hard for you, but I was like, you really don't. Like, I just felt lonely. I didn't know, you know, people were watching everything I did. It was like, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. I felt like all of my childhood had been, you know, I don't even remember what it was like for a life before diabetes at this point, because I felt like that's only thing I could focus on was trying to do a life with type 1 diabetes.
When you found yourself misunderstood, did you try to explain to people, or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I honestly just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just, you know, kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it unless I absolutely had to.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I think I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college and moving to an even bigger town, that's where I finally found those people where I was like, okay, there's a lot of other people that have type 1 diabetes. And, you know, there's a community out there which I had never experienced before.
Is college where you met somebody with diabetes for the first time, or just where you met more people with different ways of thinking?
So I met my first person with diabetes, actually my freshman year of high school. There was only one other person, and he had had it since he was a kid, like young, once we were like maybe born, mm-hmm. or like right after that time frame. So that was the only other person I knew until I got to college and I started meeting other people. I was a member of the band and I was an RA. So I was like, okay, there's a small handful of people also at my university. But then once I moved to St. Louis, And a lot of my friends I met were like med students and they were young professionals. And that's where I started really getting involved with one of my really close friends to this day. He was also type 1 diabetic. And I was like, that's who introduced me to all these different types of communities and technologies, and which is really what helped jumpstart my learning more in with type 1 diabetes.
Do you think, I mean, there was that one person in high school, but you were young. Do you really think you were ready to build a relationship and around diabetes, or did you even know the reason why that would be important at the time?
I didn't. You know, I honestly didn't think about it. I just was like, oh, there's another person in my class that's kind of going through the same thing as I am, but they've also had it a lot longer than I have. So they've kind of got it down. They don't really talk about it. And I was like, well, I don't really have much to connect with them. Connect with them on.
Yeah, no. So now once your world expands, as far as different people, different backgrounds, different places in college, you see the need to connect in real life, but there's still only a few people, but there's still value in that, right?
Correct.
What do you think that value was at the time?
I think it was just what making me feel like I was just a normal person. I just wanted that. And I needed to know that, like, you know, there was other people out there with type 1 diabetes experiencing the same type of, you know, thoughts that I was having.
When were you first introduced to the Medtronic Champions community?
Yeah. So about 2 years ago, I was, you know, I was looking around and I stumbled upon the Medtronic community. And I was like, this is something I really, really, I kind of need. You know, I said, all throughout these years, I was, you know, afraid to show my pump. I would wear long sleeves, like didn't want people to see my CGMs because I didn't want people to ask me questions. And, you know, I just felt so uncomfortable. And then I noticed seeing these people really in the Medtronic community, just they embraced it. You could see them. They weren't afraid to show it. And that was something I was really looking forward to.
How is it knowing that your diabetes technology is such an important part of your health and your care and having to hide it? What did it feel like to have to hide that diabetes technology? And how did it feel to be able to kind of let it go?
I refused to go anywhere. I would run to the bathroom. I just didn't want to do it in public because I felt like people were watching me. And that was just one of the hardest things I was trying to overcome. You know, I was fresh out of college, going into the young professional world. So, you know, going out on work events and things like that, I just didn't think to have it out because I was so afraid. But then once I did start, you know, embracing it and showing it, that's when the curiosity came. And it was actually genuine questions and people wanting to know more about the equipment that I'm on and how does this work and what does this mean and things like that, which it kind of inspired me because I was like, okay, people actually do want to understand what I'm experiencing with type 1 diabetes.
What did you experience when the internet came into play? And now suddenly as easy as a hashtag and you can meet all these other people who are living with diabetes as well. Can you tell me how that is either different or valuable, I guess, compared to meeting a few people in real life?
Absolutely. I think if you look back from when I was first diagnosed to now, I would have never thought of, like, you know, searching anything for someone with type 1 diabetes. And now it's like, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic Champions and you see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that kind of just motivates me, and which is how I've kind of came out of my shell and started embracing more and posting more on my social media with about, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes. And I think that's something that I hope can inspire everyone else.
What was it like having more personal, intimate relationships in college with type 1?
I think it was kind of hard to explain, you know, just for example, like no one really knows, understands like what a low is. And I think that was a very hard thing for me to explain. Like you know, it can happen in any moment and I'm sweating. I'm just really like not all there. And I'm trying to explain like, hey, this is what's going on. I need your help. And I think that was something that was hard for me to, you know, I did talk to people about it. So when this happened, they were like, oh, you know, what's going on with you? I'm like, I'm actually a type 1 diabetic. Yeah. This is what's going on. I need your help.
What about once you've had an experience like that in front of someone, was it always bonding or did it ever have people kind of step back and be maybe more, I don't know, leery of your relationship?
After I would tell someone I had type 1 diabetes after some type of event or anything, like they were kind of more upset with me that I didn't tell them up front. because they were like, you know, I care about you as a person. I would have loved to have known this about you. It's not anything you should have to hide from me. And I think that was a lot of the realization that I was going through with a lot of people.
Okay. Let me ask you this. So now we talked about what it was like to be low and to have that more kind of emergent situation. But what about when your blood sugar has been high or stubborn and you're not thinking correctly, but it's not as obvious maybe to you or to them?
Yeah. So I go through my same experiences when I have high blood sugars. You know, I can tell, like, from my coworkers, for example, I didn't really talk to, you know, when I go, I'll backtrack. When I visit multiple sites for work, I usually don't announce it. And so sometimes I'm working throughout the day. I might have snacked, forgot to take some insulin, and my blood sugar is running high. And I'm a little bit more irritable. I'm all over the place. And I'm like, let me stop. Hey, guys, I need to, like, take some insulin. I'm sorry. I didn't tell you guys I'm a diabetic. So you may be wondering why I'm kind of just a little bit snippy. You know, so I like to make sure I do that now going forward, because that's something I noticed and it was kind of hindering me with my career, because I was, you know, getting irritable because I'm working nonstop and I'm forgetting to take a step back and focus on my diabetes.
Right. Hey, with the advent of new technology like Medtronic CGM and other diabetes technology, can you tell me how that's improved your life and those interactions with people?
Yeah, I can. I feel confident knowing that it's working in the background. As someone, and I've always adamantly said it, I have been someone that's really bad with counting my carbs. So sometimes I kind of undershoot it because I'm scared, but it allows me to just know that, hey, it's got my back if I forget something. And I think that allows me to have a quick lunch, and then I'm able to get back into the work day because it's such a fast paced industry that I work in. So sometimes it is easy to forget. And so I love that I have that system that's keeping track of everything for me.
Let me ask you one last question. When you have interactions online with other people who have type 1 diabetes, what social media do you find the most valuable for you personally? Like, what platforms do you see the most people and have the most good interactions on?
Yeah, I've had tremendous interactions on Instagram. That's where I've kind of seen a lot of other diabetics reach out to me and ask me questions. I've commented and be like, hey, you're experiencing this too. But I've recently also been seeing TikToks and, you know, finding on that side of it, I didn't, you know, see the videos and the fun videos. And I'm like, I would love to do stuff like that, but I just never have the courage. So I'm seeing people make, like, just the fun engagement videos now, which I love, you know, really bringing that awareness to diabetes.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? Maybe you don't know this, but there's some sort of an age cutoff somewhere where there is an entire world of people with type 1 diabetes existing on Facebook mm-hmm. that don't go into TikTok or Instagram and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I do think it's pretty broken down by, you know, when that platform was most popular for those people by age. But your younger people, I'm acting like I'm 100 years old, but younger people seem to enjoy video more.
Yes, I think it's just because it's something you see. And so it's like, and I think the one thing, and obviously it's a big stereotype around diabetes, is you don't look like you have diabetes. And that's something I always faced. And so when I see other people that are just, you know, normal, everyday people, and I'm like, they have type 1 diabetes just like me. They're literally living their life, having fun. That's just something you want to see it, because you don't get to see people living their everyday lives with diabetes. And I think that's something I've really enjoyed.
Yeah. What are your health goals? When you go to the endocrinologist and you make a plan for the next few months, what are you hoping to achieve, and where do you struggle and where do you see your successes?
I'll be honest, I was not someone who was as, you know, involved in my diabetes. I wasn't really focused on my health. And that was something that, you know, you go into an endocrinologist and you get these results back and it's not what you want to hear. It makes you nervous. It makes you scared. And so I personally, for myself, you know, I was like, this is my chance to change. I know there's people that are living just like me, everyday lives, and they can keep their A1Cs and their blood sugars under control. How can I do this? So I go in with, you know, I would like to see it down a certain number of points each time. I would love for my doctor to be like, hey, I see you're entering your carbs. I see you're, you know, you're not having lows. You're not running high too often. That's my goal. And I've been seeing that. And that's what motivates me every time I go to the endocrinologist, where I don't dread going. It's like an exciting visit for me.
So you like to set a goal for yourself and then for someone to acknowledge it, to give you kind of that energy to keep going for the next goal.
Yeah, I feel as a type 1 diabetic, for me, and it's just, it's a lot to balance. It's a hard, our journey.
Yeah.
And so I want someone, when I go in, I want to be able to know, like, hey, I see what you're doing. Let's work together to do this. You don't want to be put down, like, you know, you're doing horrible. It's just, it's not going to motivate you because you're already fighting a tough battle. So just having that motivation and acknowledging the goods and also how we can improve, that's what really has been the game changer for me in the past 2 years.
Jalen, I appreciate you spending this time with me. This was terrific. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
If you enjoyed Jalen's story, check out MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox.